I'm pretty sure that I think I'm older than you, so I had more say in what I watched.
Save the Last Dance had the streets on block for
Did
a
they?
long time.
No. That was never cool. It's no way.
That was on the movie poster. That's what it said. Save the
It's
Last Dance has the streets on lock.
no way that that was actually a cool movie.
Well, you
I
know.
mean, you're saying Julia Stiles isn't the embodiment of hip hop dance
I don't
culture?
care what you say. That's Mandy Moore. Or Renee Zellweger.
Mandy Moore, Renee Zellweger, Hillary Clinton, Julia Stiles. Yeah, all look same.
Jake Gyllenhaal sister.
And meanwhile, Kerry Washington was just like, white ladies, they're the worst. For like 2 hours.
So wait, hold on. Welcome to Debatable, a fake television show where we debate nothing. But someone who does look different today is David Dennis Jr. What's going on, man?
I'm glad you asked. So last Friday.
You're here to arrest us.
No, well, last Friday, how dare you, first of all.
The
Second of all,
documents are secure.
He called
Oh,
you them
sorry.
people.
I know, he called me 12, which is fighting words. So
retracted.
last Friday we did Debatable. Pablo admitted to wearing a shirt 2 days in a row.
I
Dominique
did.
wears his, usual Debatable thing. And then 4 hours later, pardon the interruption, you guys are suited and booted. So I'm trying to show you the respect that you did not show me or the show, and I'm wearing a shirt and tie because Debatable needs to be raised at the level that of respect that you guys had for PTI
You got
and
on
not for the
pants,
show.
or you got on
I
pants?
have on suit pants.
Wow, that's commitment to
Wow,
the bit.
That is,
You are fully
yo,
committed, not
that
committed
is.
enough to tighten your tie, but.
No, I couldn't do it. I haven't tied a tie. I haven't tied a tie in ages. This is all you're getting.
Wait, you are method hot taking right now.
I am.
This is
I am.
wildly impressive.
I'm the Daniel Day-Lewis of takes. So
Oh,
that's what I'm doing.
I when I asked the question,
I
Dominique, I
can't pick Daniel
legitimately
Day-Lewis
thought,
out in the lineup either, I don't think.
Oh, come on.
I feel like Daniel
Gangs
Day-Lewis.
of New York, Phantom
Oh,
Thread.
he was the mustache in Gangs of New York. I got you.
He was the mustache.
Right? The black
Yeah.
mustache.
He did have a black mustache.
Real disappointed when I went to see Gangs of New York, guys, because
What?
I didn't,
Okay.
no, I didn't
This
know,
is
I didn't see the ads. I was like, I don't know, 20 something. I was just out and I was like, I want to go to a movie. And it said Gangs of New York. And I thought we was in for a mob picture. And I walked in and we going back in time, people fighting with cleavers. And it was like, nah, I'm good.
You were trying to show up to Save the Last Dance 2, colon, Gangs of New York. And instead, you got a picture about immigration in
Well,
the early 20th century, or before then,
at
maybe.
least Save the Last Dance was more historically accurate than Gangs of New York. That's neither here nor there. Sorry.
Okay. So, Alabaster, speaking of being somewhere, Alabaster is tapping that goddamn marker on a name so
Well,
insistently. So, Alabaster, about it.
let's talk about someone else who's taken a cleaver to New York, and that's James Dolan of the Knicks, who didn't get Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell is a Cav. They're an exciting young team. They're four deep. They have four young stars. And my question to you all, does Donovan Mitchell instantly make the Cavs a championship contender?
That's a real question.
Definitely.
Some words in there that are worth unpacking. Instantly and contender. And I feel like I came in ready to say they're a top five team in the East,
And
but I don't think that's good
Cavs
enough for
and
Alabaster.
championship. No, this is a very short question. You can go and put a check next to it. No, like the history of the NBA, one thing we know for sure, you need a him on the roster, and they don't got a him on the roster right now. Like a guy that just is top five players in the league type of guy. Sometimes you need two or three of those in recent history. And I think Donovan Mitchell may qualify as the best player on that team, but he's the second best player on a championship team, tops. He might be third
I
best.
will say, David, if Donovan Mitchell is the best player on the Cavs are boned. Like this is not how this can go. If this is their plan, Donovan Mitchell be the best of us, this isn't going to end well, in my opinion.
Well, that is the problem with this trade for the Cavs. Like all the success of this trade depends on them re-signing Donovan Mitchell because their path to a championship is not going to be in the 3 years while he is under contract right now. Their path to a championship is when those young players are more closer to their prime and you have Donovan Mitchell as the third best player, and then you can try to become a championship contender. That's the only way they're going to do it. They don't have, like Dominic said, they don't have a Himothy right now on the team, but they have future Himothys that Donovan Mitchell can possibly help. But right now, the timeline does not line up. So if they cannot sign Donovan Mitchell, this is a disaster.
But hold on, because Dominique, they have a Timothée Chalamet, a young star, a Mape. I know none of these.
Is he the same as Tom Holland? Is
that Spider-Man, right? That's 100% Spider-Man.
That's 100% Spider-Man. Or one of them. One of the Spider-Man. It's very confusing, admittedly, now that I try to outline which of the Spider-Man he is. However, I believe that Evan Mobley is the young stud that could be a top five-ish player in the league. And Alabaster, I know your basketball nerd antenna are raising, but I believe that's so. Evan Mobley is one of these futuristic aliens. He's a seven-footer who handles the ball like a guard. He plays defense excellently. He passes. He can move the ball. He can do all of these things. You pair him, and we should say the names of the other young players that David alluded to and that you alluded to, Dominique, right? Darius Garland is an all-star. Jarrett Allen, who is just a funny story because the Nets picked goddamn DeAndre Jordan over him. He goes off, becomes an all-star defensive-minded center, sort of starts this whole Cavs renaissance, and then, Donovan Mitchell ends up being the guy who joins them last. And I think the future is bright, but I agree that it's going to take a couple years for them to actually contend for a championship year in and year out.
Is Jared Allen going to hate Donovan Mitchell the way Rudy Gobert did because Donovan Mitchell was a turnstile defensively, or is he going to love him because he's going to get them block stats all the way up?
I think the question is kind of like, are you the type of person who likes to feel like they earn their money? Because they're going to be working harder than ever, but they will be necessary and more valuable for those reasons.
All right, what's up, Alabaster? Well, nerd it out, buddy.
To your point, this is why the fit is so interesting, because beyond Jared Allen, who is excellent, they were a top five defense for the first 50 games when Jared Allen was playing before he was injured. Evan Mobley is so far ahead of the curve defensively for a young big. He's already awesome. He's already an all-NBA caliber defensive player, and like he might not be their primary option on offense, but he will be their best player pretty much immediately, assuming he progresses. And Garland is also a creator on the level of Mitchell in a lot of ways. Like, their flaws of having these two small guards are oddly protected by having these two mutants who can guard the perimeter and the rim and have Isaac Okoro there. They have, like, a weirdly complete roster for someone we think could be a five seed.
But what they don't have is the thing that Dominique likes to point out that all of the contenders seem to have, right? Which is a wing. Yeah. They don't. This is a team that is built in the negative space around wings. Like Isaac Okoro is the forward that they're gonna suit up there. And the question, right? Like part of the question of why a wing is so important is not merely that all of these teams have them. It's how do you stop them?
Right.
And that's where Alabaster, I think you're saying, right? Like you need Evan Mobley to be a true alien defender who can patrol the perimeter as well as the paint. And that dude's going to be, working double overtime, doing all that.
And you also need him on the offensive end to, like, I feel like those are the guys who close, too, is those ball-handling wings. So it's possible that they can zig while everyone else is zagging, and they can create mismatches and problems for opposing defenses because their team is constructed in a different way. But what I feel like is more likely is they don't have the guy, or at least developed enough to be in a position where teams are going to have to adjust to them. And the size isn't what I'm concerned about for them defensively. It's like the either desire or ability to actually stay in front of people and make them work, because that's always what it comes down to in the playoffs is the defense. It seems like always seems to be a huge question mark or a dividing point for teams that are like playoff teams and teams that are championship teams. And I don't know. I guess Jared Allen's going to be enough, but we haven't seen them in playoff level competitiveness.
No, missed it last year.
Quick interjection Alabaster, on that. It's just that two things I have to push back on. One, guards can certainly be offensive closers. We've seen that with Steph Curry. We saw that the year before with Devin Booker and Chris Paul. Their team, like offensive creation, is less wing dependent than it is defensive stops. But the thing is, it's like Donovan Mitchell is replacing Caris LeVert in a starting lineup that was a top five defensive unit. It's not like he's replacing, you know, Mikal Bridges or someone who's like a lockdown defender. He's not a massive positional downgrade over who they had out there last year when they were a good unit.
A, Devin Booker qualifies as a wing, as far as I'm concerned. B, the difference is not being top five defensive player or defensive team in the regular season. It's the ability to play defense in the playoffs when they are looking for your weakness and attacking them. What I said is we don't know what this defense looks like when you're in the playoffs and teams are game planning for you and they're out here hunting your guy, which might also happen to be the guy that you have to have on the floor to close in Donovan Mitchell. That's the rub that I'm thinking about, because the question that you posed, Alabaster, was not a question that allowed us to talk about how good they are or how much improved they're going to be, how competitive they're going to be. The question you posed was, are they a championship contender? And my answer is nah, not with these questions. So if you want to change your question and take it back, we can talk about all this stuff that you want to seem to squeeze in. But if you want to keep the question, you want us to respect it, the answer is nah, Chief. They are not a championship contender.
Oh, he's doing his serial killer handwriting.
Ooh. Yeah, they're pretty good now.
They're absolutely.
They're going to make it up.
Yeah, pretty damn good.
First round, no, once I think or twice.
Top five contender in the East is a fair point. But, you know, when I was asking David about why he was dressed like our attorney or the person who is, I'm trying to figure out what's not problematic. Yeah.
Attorney, did I tell you this? One of my favorite jokes when I was a player, some teams required us to wear a suit when we traveled. So we all get to the hotel and then we go out to eat, like a group of us, four or five of us. And inevitably it'd be one guy who didn't change to something more comfortable. And I would always make the hostess uncomfortable by saying that it was my attorney and we were having an acquittal party, and then keep that joke going all night when the servers are asking us what were we charged with. It's so much fun and uncomfortable. It's the nice thing about being an anonymous football player. You show up in town, yes, and they don't know who you are. They're just like, hey, they got money and one guy got all the suits.
Yeah, that didn't work out so well when I would go to Applebee's and try that trick. You got to be in a certain type of establishment, yeah, that football players
free apps.
Buy nice steaks. Yeah, that didn't work out.
Like the breadsticks are already unlimited, sir. Like there's really no more system.
That's how I know you've been rich. Breadsticks is from Olive Garden, not Applebee's.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Goodness,
I'm sorry.
You fancy.
I forgot
New Yorkers.
Which place you go and feel like family at. But wait,
I mean, Pablo was posting restaurant video pictures this morning. Him and Deezus, they had like wine and
just drinking some chartreuse.
Don't do this. Fall into this trap. All he wants is us to talk about him, and you fell into the trap, David. I know you're not as experienced with dealing with Pablo as I am, but I'll have you know, he was going to get to it point in his show.
It's funny that you say that because I am that way, Dominique. I thought that David Dennis Jr. was wearing the suit because he wanted me to ask, us to ask about Steph Curry's retirement jersey ceremony. I thought we were going to a Steph Curry place like 10 minutes ago.
I love that you assume that everyone else is like you. Is a drenched narcissist just like you. What's up, Allie? What you got?
I got some basketball follow-ups. First one's quick. How sad do you think LeBron is today? How much does he regret that extension that he can't just be like, guys, I'm coming home again. I'm coming back to Cleveland to win a championship with these young guys. It's the hardest road.
Crossed his mind. No doubt it crossed his mind. I mean, part of him signing the 2-year extension with the Lakers is that it enabled this. I mean, Donovan Mitchell could have been the space where LeBron James fit. And my God, if you replace Isaac Okoro, the aforementioned anonymous wing that we mentioned, with LeBron James, yes, instant championship contender. But yeah, that story seems to be dead and gone.
We haven't gotten to the Knicks of all of this. Is that worth discussing?
No,
because I feel like they dodged a bullet, in my view. As they should be happy. Knicks fans should be rejoicing because it seems that they wanted to give up a whole bunch of valuable stuff for a non-hemophy. And I don't I don't like that for them. I'm happy that they did not fall into, or they were saved from that trap. I guess the booby trap didn't work. They like stepped on the bear trap and it didn't snap on them, fortunately. But Pablo, you're a Knicks fan.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, I certainly, again, I identify with the psychology of Knicks fans, and used to, in a really sincere way. I think this is one of those trades that illustrates the difference between contexts, right? Like, yes, he makes the Cavs a team on the road to a championship contender, right? On the road. We'll split the difference there with the language. With the Knicks, he's doing jack shit, right? Like, yeah. You can be a difference maker for one team and just an albatross for another. And David, I believe you're nodding your head here. Like, the fit on the Knicks never made sense. They don't have a Jared Allen. They don't have an Evan Mobley to erase those mistakes in the front court, right? Like, this would have been disastrous. And so the Knicks, shockingly, end up displaying restraint.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the Knicks displayed restraint or Danny Ainge just like saved them from themselves, which yeah. probably is more possible. probably more likely what happened. I mean, the Cavs made a championship trade for a guy that they hope can help them bring a championship in the next 10 years or whatever. The Knicks were making a championship trade for a guy that was going to get them in the play-in tournament, and they were going to use their entire future to do that. I'm not sure RJ Barrett is like that much worse than Donovan Mitchell, like has the potential to be that much worse than Donovan Mitchell.
Oh,
like
going you're going to upset himself. Alabaster. You're going to upset Alabaster. He really hates he really hates RJ Barrett.
He does.
Well, he does. You know.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm on your
side. We talked about it.
I'm with you. I'm on your side, Bishop Dennis. I think that's the place you can go, Pablo, yep. where you won't be offensive, because he does look like he looks like the bishop who passes around a collection plate, but we gotta count it after we get it from him.
Yeah, looks like my middle name should be Aloysius.
it does look like you're a bishop who also has a commercial.
Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, here we come. Here comes RJ Barrett.
I have a question. Like, I'm actually wondering where the disconnect between me and you guys are with someone like RJ Barrett and Donovan Mitchell. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, Donovan Mitchell is a top five first team all NBA player, but he is a fringe third team all NBA guy who's in his mid 20s, who scored 50 plus points in playoff games, has won playoff rounds, has closed out a series in the Western Conference, and like, RJ Barrett is someone who's been largely inefficient in his first 3 years and is 2.5 years younger than Donovan Mitchell. I actually don't see the gap being closed. I'm wondering what you guys see as the massive downside of a young player like Mitchell moving and the upside of someone like RJ Barrett staying.
I mean, I told you this last time, maybe you just want David to tell you it, but it's not about Mitchell versus Barrett directly. It's about Barrett and everything else is much more attractive than Mitchell. So RJ Barrett grows into someone who's as effective as Donovan
Mitchell.
I
was just responding to them being close. Them being close in value.
Well, so here's the argument I would make, right? I believe that Donovan Mitchell, as a guy who has, as you said, scored 50 in the playoffs, should get some measure of real respect because he's done that. That is undeniable. Like, those games, those duels, right, against Jamal Murray and the Nuggets were truly, like, phenomenal. But at the same time, we're talking about, like, and again, you can object to the hierarchy here, but we're talking about who are the three best players on a championship team. That is still the formula that I think about all of this through. Maybe it's very simple, too simple. But RJ Barrett is the third best player on a championship team. Donovan Mitchell is the third or maybe the second. And that maybe is where I think the argument is going to occur.
Yeah, let me just say what Dominique said, but with a suit. So I think that it's not just comparing RJ Barrett to Donovan Mitchell. It's comparing RJ Barrett and all of the picks
that you were going to put
with RJ Barrett to Donovan
Insightful.
Mitchell. It doesn't really work. I don't think that's where the gap doesn't make that much sense.
Oh,
and now if you can turn to Hebrews 5:3, give me some more information.
Oh man, I remember when I was a kid, one time, like lots of memories from church stick in my head when I was a kid, but there is one specific one that sticks in my head where we had to find a different church because the pastor suggested to us that real faith is putting your money in the collection plate when you don't know how you're going to pay your rent. And my parents was like,
Nah. Was your, was your Reverend Jim Dolan?
Yes. Pastor Jim Dolan in the quick shots? What is he called? The slick
JD
shots?
In the straight shot. The straight wearing shot? Wearing robes, yeah. Swaying back and forth, singing to
just
us.
Just throw all your draft picks in this bucket. Yeah. So, we don't know how we're going. Like,
that is true faith. Oh, goodness gracious. I think we're done.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Can I complain about billionaires again, real quick?
Oh, sure. By all means.
Okay. So we've spent all summer like complaining about Kevin Durant, what he's doing to competitiveness and demanding a trade, and all of that stuff. Meanwhile, Danny Ainge and the Jazz are blowing up a young team, like with two core players who are under contract, and they are not going to be competitive for 5 years. Feel like that's as damaging to a fan base and franchises and the league as what we're talking about Kevin Durant and all these players on the contract we're going to be doing.
Yeah, and the Jazz actually have fans.
They do have fans. What's, you know who's
the
not going to be
the kindest, most kindest.
Yeah, exactly. Just ask Vernon Maxwell about that. The Jazz ended up getting 7 first rounders, 3 pick swaps. And 9 players, and you know the 9 players aren't good because we've referred to them as collectively 9 players in exchange for Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. And the thing I think about here, and we can, you know, there's of course, the rebuilding conversation, the timeline conversation. I was born in that darkness. I was raised by it. But the question is, like, yo, if you're the French kid.
Oh, Wimbanyama. I haven't said it in a while.
Force them out.
How do we nailed Chalamet, but not Wembanyama?
I can't imagine going from Paris to Oklahoma City, exactly, or Utah, like
or San Antonio,
or San Antonio.
That's where.
Welcome to the NBA, buddy.
I mean,
hope you can bring some seasoning across the board.
Oh man. Oh.
Alabaster, I think.
I got one more pushback.
Whoa. Oh,
I got one more pushback.
And I feel like
it's about the Jazz
up,
angle.
Like,
it's about the Popeye, Jazz angle. It's like I don't actually. This is a follow up for you, David. I don't understand why it's wrong for them to blow it up, considering we sort of have mocked them incessantly for being a one seed that couldn't get out of the second round. They're second round fodder, and it's like
you're not listening. You got distracted by the time.
No, I just
you
don't understand like why
point.
That's damaging compared to Kevin. Like
you didn't hear.
Aren't they trying
point.
To win a championship?
Well, the point is it's. It's fine if it's fine, but you can't say that what Kevin Durant is doing is wrong and then be okay with what the Jazz are doing. Like, they're basically doing similar things. They're trying to make it to a championship. Yeah, I'm saying it with my hands.
So now maybe it'll make more sense.
Yeah, it's just the fact that they're both sort of doing a disservice, if you want to call it that, to the fans of the franchise with people under contract. The idea with Kevin Durant was that he's under contract. He cannot do this. But yet the Jazz have players under contract, and they are doing essentially the same thing. They're rebuilding in the middle of contract. I mean, like to me, the worst things that are for competitiveness that's happened to the NBA has nothing to do with Kevin Durant or Ben Simmons. It has to do with the Jazz doing
Pablo.
And it has to do with the Rockets sitting John Wall for 2 years when he's under contract.
Which all ties back to Pablo.
Yes, thank you. Finally. Finally, it's come back to me. No, it has to do with the rules and the incentives, right? Like, this is ultimately about if you're really about this championship contention life, what would you do to get there? And Danny Ainge is obviously somebody who is like, yeah, I'm gonna take the long way because the long way here also happens to be the most direct way. And this is the story of tanking. This is the story of tanking. And look, I don't know. I truly don't know if we have the time to figure out the differences between the power wielded by an owner and the power wielded by a player and the ethical implications of either, right? It has to do with like, what do we grant a contract? What power does a contract have in this world that we live in sports? Dominique, you know where I'm going.
It's like I think it's a great question that is more societal than it is just about sports. And I think that we find it okay and palatable for things to be done a certain way by certain people. And when someone else uses whatever power they have to disrupt the natural order of things, most people get uncomfortable with it, particularly when there are people that they are uncomfortable with for other reasons that they may be aware of or not aware of. So, like, I understand the concept is like, no, they signed a contract. That's the concept. But when you have power and leverage to force things to happen, that's what you do. And it's like arguing that certain people can evade taxes legally. It's because they have the power and leverage to do it. And no one's out here up in arms about them doing that. Like, it falls into the same construct to me. Kevin Durant hasn't done anything wrong. He didn't, like, actually violate a contract by walking out and going and putting on someone else's jersey. He's just like, look, I don't want to do this. And then you have to respond to it. So it's just using your leverage in a different way. As a little guy my whole life, not physically, but, like, metaphorically, I guess, I tend to find myself siding with the players who, again, aren't little physically. Yes. Or metaphorically, but in the league construct, they are the little guy. They are the labor.
Relatively speaking.
Forced to play under wages that are less than they actually deserve, which I know I'm going to lose everybody there, but it's true.
No. I mean, in summation, Alabaster, I feel like the only way to put a button on this is simply to repeat, yeah, abolish the draft.
Please.
And then we can talk about all of this stuff
and
in a way that's more direct and equitable.
The only thing I could put back on any of that is just that no situation that Kevin Durant wanted to join was going to push himself closer to a championship than the one that he had built for himself with other All-NBA guys in a stacked roster. And so that's where I disagree on that.
Well, the jury is out on if getting 10 draft picks and having them stay in Utah and having them ask that they're going to re-sign in Utah, it brings them any closer than having two stars who signed with Utah.
What gives them a better chance? Because we know they're in the second round with what they had.
Well, what gives them a better chance? The second round's pretty good. What gives them a better chance, I would think, is two guys who want to stay and are willing to, like, two stars that want to and are willing to stay in Utah. But
Himothy Wembanyama LeMay.
Okay, yeah. I'm with you if you are guaranteed him. But you are not, and you're also not guaranteed that he gonna stay. I would argue that you're guaranteed that he won't if you get him out there. But anyway, we can move on. So,
I mean, hey, one of those draft picks might be the next Donovan Mitchell.
I could literally argue about this part of it forever. So, Alabaster,
this is great. You guys are starting to value Donovan Mitchell. My point has been made. Let's move on.
I got a question. Before you move on.
I did not.
We established yesterday, as I'm sure you know, David, because you were watching, that Pablo is the salt and I'm the pepper on this menu. So, does that make you Spinderella? Okay, we can go.
Wow.
You were waiting on that the whole
it was sitting in my head.
You were thinking about that since yesterday. You're like, no matter who the third person is going to be, I'm going to make a Spinderella.
I wish I could take that credit, but it popped into my head midway through that segment, and I was like, it's not going to be funny, but I got to get it out. It's like when you have a song stuck in your head. I knew it wasn't going to land, but I had to get it out. Otherwise, it's going to be haunting me all weekend.
Again, this is probably the first time that seasoning and Utah has been in the same place.
All right, guys, let's move on.
I hope Spinderella's okay.
Salt Lake is drying up. Did you know that? It's making a lot of environmental hazards in Utah right now.
Oh, everything's drying.
Global warming.
Let's move on to someone who could use some electrolytes. And my question, what are the chances Chris Jefferson will remember this play fondly, despite what happened right afterwards and the fact that Purdue choked?
Let's watch.
Yes. Big play.
No, Purdue Penn State. Yep.
Purdue interception, pick six to take the lead against their Big Ten rivals. He takes it all the way to the crib as a DB. I love to see potential game-winning pick sixes. And then this.
They go up 30-28 and also going up the contents of that dude's stomach. Yeah.
They ended up losing that game on a fourth quarter drive by Penn State. But I don't know. I feel like college kids, a lot of their best memories probably end with them vomiting.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, he's still going to fondly remember this. Maybe the game-winning touchdown on the other side will make it less of a good memory. But I don't know. A lead-taking interception return for a touchdown, I don't know what his draft stock is at, but I assume that is not super high, and he's not going to have a long NFL career. So this is going to be a highlight for that man for a long time.
We spent yesterday's show, part of it, Dominique, if you recall, establishing that when someone vomits, we're going to call it going number three.
Yes.
Now, number one, we know. Number two, we know. This should be number three. It is. And so for that reason, give me 3%. Mm-hmm. 3% chance that he's going to fondly remember. Actually, he's not going to have to remember it. He's going to be staring at himself, David, forever in his mentions, vomiting. Funny. Number three.
Yeah, I'm going to go 80% because he will remember this fondly because somebody in a pink tie is talking about him in this highlight. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Dominique, you're probably the expert on sports vomiting, and that seemed like a nice dehydration vomit.
Has this ever happened to you?
Are you calling me bulimic? What are you doing? Anorexic?
No, I'm just forced vomiting? You probably pushed your body to the limit.
I've never thrown up. I had lots of teammates who threw up. I mean, I've thrown up before, but I had lots of teammates who threw up during workouts. One of my best friends and roommate threw up before every game, just out of nerves or whatever. I never threw up. I don't know. I have no idea what it feels like. Only time I throw up is I got like a stomach bug. So I've never been dehydrated to the point. I also didn't drink in college, so
That's right.
I stayed pretty hydrated. Important.
So for all of the podcast listeners out there,
bleep them.
This is an important part of the Dominique Foxworth legend. Okay, he did not drink in college. He was a disciplined, very, very responsible young person. He's been trying to go wild, as they say in those videos.
Go back to college. You really didn't go to college to drink. You got to just go back. Just go and roll.
I'll tell you some stories. I had a decent time in college.
We'll save that for the After Dark live show.
We have attorney client privilege. So we can talk everything you want to talk about.
How many students go to Davidson? Because that feels like it's a little too small for me. I would have got myself in trouble at Davidson.
About 2,000.
That's a high school.
High school and for some reason you would stick out at Davidson. Everybody would sort of know
College Park. It was a lot of people, so you could slip in and out of many friend circles and have a good time whether you were intoxicated or not. Moving on.
Oh yeah, I was one of plausibly 50 different biology majors in college, so it's all good. I relate.
That's terrible.
Again, what have you done with your life? You're sitting here talking to us.
Agreed.
Like, what's going on, man?
At least today he's talking to somebody in a suit. So he's...
That does make me feel better. Honestly, psychologically, I've noticed. I'm like, this feels more respectable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Bring a little class to the show. I'm trying.
All right, guys. Next one. What are the chances South Carolina State's punter knew this was against the rules?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I haven't seen this.
You haven't seen this?
No.
Oh, this is great. Look at this. Yeah. Great part. Oh, man.
I love this.
I have never seen this. And even things that I haven't seen before, like, I feel like I would know how to react in that situation or understand the penalty. I never seen someone fake punt and then decide to punt that. My first question when I saw this is like, is he American? Does he feel like we're playing a different sport?
Is he a French kid?
Yeah. Did they just find like a soccer player and was like, hey.
Wait, that's their actual punter?
Yeah. That's not a...
Oh, wow. Follow-up questions. Dyson Roberts is not... Okay. This is his job full time. Also surprising.
I don't know if you guys heard a few months ago, there was a story, an actor named Will Smith slapped another actor named Chris Rock, right? It was sort of an underrated story. And so when that happened, there were a lot of people like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and like old black folks like, you know, you're embarrassing black people and all this stuff. I'm like, I don't get embarrassed by like that sort of stuff. Only thing I get embarrassed is like, when black people give bad answers on Family Feud, like that still embarrasses me. But I also get really embarrassed when black punters and kickers do bad. And I feel so embarrassed on behalf of, like, I want black punters and kickers to do well, and he just, I feel like he set us back far back, like the worst possible family feud answer.
This is Dominique. Right, this is the most fitting respectability bootstrap answer from a guy wearing a suit in debate.
It's South Carolina State. It's a black school. They also were the school that like the 60-year-old guy playing college football at some point. That was that school, right?
I love the school now.
I mean, formerly the linebacker formerly known as Darius Leonard did go there too, so that's positive. He wants people to call him Shaquille now, which is his given name. That's why he's an all-pro, great linebacker. So let's talk about him, because that's less shameful than what is happening otherwise with South Carolina State Bulldog football.
Yeah, I love – so he did convert. I mean, in his defense, in his meager defense, he converted a fake punt on 4th-and-3 four plays earlier. That's great. And so is this just like a J.R. Smith kind of like just forgot the clock? I guess it's more embarrassing than that, actually. How many yards beyond the line of scrimmage?
It's one of those things where it's a heat check. It was a heat check. He converted a 4th-and-3, and he went, 4th-and-17? I got that too. Oh, no, I don't.
This is like something that would have happened in like Mike or something like that. Like Bow Wow would have done this in the basketball game. Like, this is just inconceivable. Wow. 7 yards past the line of scrimmage and you kick the ball. Like, what are you playing? What sport are we playing?
Well, speaking of playing, this is 100% for me, unfortunately. I'm going to go the easy way out. 100% he knew this against the rules. It's a thing that you literally can't do when you're playing video games. Yes. So I love that you managed to pull it off in real life. And that way he is kind of a pioneer.
Yeah, they have not even programmed that penalty into Madden, because no one would even imagine doing that. I mean, I have to say,
you should 0%. Be able to kick the ball at any point in any possession. Like, if you're like 1 yard away or running back, they should allow you on PlayStation to kick the ball.
I mean, it looks like rugby, right? Isn't that what they do in rugby? It's just like occasionally, let me boot that thing. I don't really know the rules of rugby. I only played it like twice,
that's what the Purdue guy said, by the way. Let me boot that thing. Yeah.
maybe he's on South Carolina State's rugby team.
Possibly. I mean, I'm assuming that he's not from
a team that definitely exists.
It totally exists, the South Carolina State rugby team. I'm sure they're doing great.
Was there like other you brought up Bow Wow and like Mike? Were there like Bow Wow existed in an interesting place in hip hop as like a boy band or like a heartthrob type rapper?
Yeah, like Aaron Carter.
How come that never took off? Because I don't remember any other.
Oh, you want a Black Bieber? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't.
Are you saying Bow Wow? You're saying Bow Wow did not take off?
No, I'm saying that as a category never took off. There was not another Bow Wow. They're like with B2K and like R&B, and obviously there's a long line of like black boy bands back to like New Edition or Jackson 5, but there was never, as hip hop has grown, there's never been like, other than Bow Wow, like the cute kid who spits lame bars about going to school or something and all the girls go crazy.
Well,
you're a little Romeo eraser here.
Ooh,
very upsetting.
Also,
you're right.
Also,
thank
also,
you. I knew it had to be
you
somebody.
You did kind of mention already. We mentioned the name of the guy who kind of fit that profile before Bow Wow. I mean, Will Smith, right? Didn't he literally rap about how parents don't understand? Like,
yeah,
that's the closest.
But he was like,
but Bow Wow was like 6.5.
That's true.
Well, I shout out to Alabaster. Shout out to Alabaster for getting the hint and knocking 5 minutes off the clock. Because when I went into my Bow Wow bit, I was like, man, we got a lot.
I was like, oh my God, make the clock wind faster. Please, for the love of God.
I never know when the clock is being manipulated. Dominique always does.
Lots of Bow Wow thoughts and the fact that he had zero talent whatsoever and was able to make as far as he did. It's kind of miraculous.
Lil Wayne, kind of an amazing child rapper. Different genre. Let's move on to the last one.
He wasn't cute though, is the thing.
Lil Wayne was talking about fatherhood.
Yeah. Yeah, Lil Wayne was a child doing man raps.
Right. He was like, there were child soldier vibes in that one. Yeah.
Let's do his last one. And that's if Serena wins again tonight, then blank.
I mean, how many times do we need to call out Oprah?
Every time.
Like, Oprah, you made us watch a goddamn rerun.
Is she okay? I mean, that's the only thing I think of is, like, everyone's
like,
there.
Gail left. Gail, I did not realize. My number one takeaway beyond, wow, Serena is not done from the first match was Gail is back and Gail is gone. And I want both of them. Serena, Oprah, Gail together after this one.
Go ahead, David.
Go ahead. No, you go for it.
I watched the doubles also, or most of it, until I got sufficiently frustrated with Venus. And realized that this was just going to make me angry. But I want to know what Venus... Well, I guess she's fine because Serena won. Had Serena lost, and then we had this match with Venus and Serena, and then Venus plays not very well, and our last memory of Serena is her being forced out by three players who are not her, would have been really sad. So I think that I'm very happy, and I will feel incredibly like privileged to get more Serena, but I'm not expecting it. You guys watched the show. I thought she was going to lose. She won. I think she's going to win this next match just because I want to root for happiness and fun and positivity in America.
That's Friday.
If Serena wins, I hope Gladys Knight actually shows up.
That was a heat check. That just
you are still hot.
The cold identification of oh there Gladys Knight. Yeah.
You are still hot.
Dionne Warwick.
The confidence was just through the roof on that. That was pulling up from half court, fed with their chest.
That happens a couple times a year, every year, and I laugh every time. It's great. That's one of the hidden joys of watching sports.
Fan of the show Wilson says, is today performance review day for David?
It's a fair question. Oh, have the tables been turned?
Oh. Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe.
Are we supposed to consult and write a whole like report that determines
this is the extent of your performance review. One black great. Thumb up, baby.
And one
great.
I guess I'm salty. One salty thumb up.
Oh man. Happy weekend, everyone. Happy Labor Day.
We made it.
Pay your laborers, especially if they play college football.